You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Dante, if I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's not good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give the information, asking for me, but blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome. You are listening to the Common Sense Show. If you're just joining us, thanks for doing so. I am your host, Dave Hodges. We come to you live every Sunday evening at this time from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. on the West Coast. And thanks so much to Mike Adams for that most interesting interview and for that little sound blast from the Mystery Woman. Hey, thanks. That was interesting, too. Just real quickly, a program note. We will have a recorded show on next Sunday, which is Christmas. And Merry Christmas to all of you as we celebrate the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. The following week, we'll be joined by Doug Hagman, Ted Brower, Robert Kudla, and Ronnie McMullen. And boy, we're going to talk about something we have never talked about here on the Common Sense Show with Ronnie. You're not going to want to miss that. Well, Paul Preston and I have become very good friends, and we're looking at this CalExit thing. And whoa. I think this is as important as the election. We're talking about the breakup of the United States. So I'm just going to say, let's listen in. It was an interview I did a few days ago, and you're not going to want to miss it. Todd, let's go ahead and let that roll. Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodge at the Common Sense Show, and we are reconnecting. I was in the middle of a conversation with Paul Preston regarding CalExit and all the chicanery going on with CalExit. And as a consequence, we were disconnected. And so we're having to splice this interview together because this is a pre-record. And we know it's probably going to be just a little bit awkward, but I don't want to leave this interview in midstream. And Paul, when we were speaking last, we were talking about the solar energy farms, and what I was starting to mention to you before we were disconnected was the fact that up near the Senior Bundy's ranch, where the original Bundy Ranch standoff took place, it was adjacent to a Chinese solar energy farm, which also backed up to an interstate, which also backed up to a major military base. And I have found that pattern in a lot of places. I don't know. Are you familiar with that pattern?
Well, somewhat. I'm familiar with around certain things like ports, like the Stockton port and the Sacramento port, which I found very curious because these are deep inland ports in California, and we've been hearing these reports for quite some time. We're also hearing reports of large concentrations of Chinese in northern California, in very extreme portions of California, northern California. And this is based upon some conversations that I've had with people. I live in Northern California, of course, but conversations that I've had with people who have been out and about in the field and witnessed, large numbers or heard about and by witnesses to other people, large numbers of Chinese in various communities. So we haven't been able to pinpoint those down. We do know that there are certain communities, and I don't want to mention them because I don't have enough evidence yet, along the I-5 corridor. But, you know, we definitely know about what's happening in Stockton, and we know about what's happening in Sacramento and West Sacramento. We know about that. So there's large numbers. They're posing as students. They're posing as employees of various businesses. The students that come here to our universities, and of course, it's been our university system that has an open door to the Chinese. You know, California students, but ladies and gentlemen, the students that go to California high schools and graduate, they are put on the back burner. They do not get first choice, as they should, and first, options to get into California universities, state universities and universities and junior colleges. That no longer happens. They are put to the end of the line, and anybody who's from China or other, like India, they get first opportunity to take the seats. And the reason is because they're getting more money for those students. But again, it's California students who get the short shift on this. That's been going on for about 15 years. And Chinese students, and this is what I've been hearing from people, when Chinese students come here to study from abroad, from China, they every year get $1 million to supplement their stay here.
My goodness, this is terrible.
You see the significant power in all that.
Well, I can see that they're setting them up to integrate them into society to be some kind of sleeper cell at a future date. That's what I see.
That's exactly right.
And I will tell you, this is also going on in places like Ketchikan, Alaska,
right,
where I have firsthand reports. Gatlin, where they had the Gatlin, Tennessee, where they had the fires.
Right.
And some people think that the Russians set the fires because their businesses were not touched. And I know a lot about the Russians. I've had Dr. Susan Hellman from Gatlinburg on my show a few times, and this is the same pattern. It's the exact same pattern.
Right. And those fires in Tennessee I live in fire country, and, we've known for a long time about fires being set around here, big fires, and you hear about this all the time in California for a number of different reasons. Sometimes you hear the corruption within the Department of Forestry, Cal Fire, that, people want overtime, so they set a fire, they get overtime. That sort of thing for the fires, and these things last for weeks sometimes. But there's deliberate fires that we know that are set by arsonists. I happened to one time work in a school area I worked in the forest many years, but one time two of my students were arrested because they set a huge fire, deliberate arson fire in Northern California, Butte County actually. And it was thoroughly investigated. I was involved in the investigation because I was their principal. And, they were Russians.
Interesting. Well, the Russians, was it 4 years ago near the Air Force Academy north of Colorado Springs? The Russians were accused, and they have a presence, by the way, at Fort Carson in the south end of Colorado Springs. They were accused of setting the fires near the Air Force Academy.
Mm-hmm.
This is not new behavior. This is something that I could go through. We could dig out other examples. So California has been infiltrated by the Chinese. How are they going to play a role with what we talked about in the previous segment, Paul, in terms of CalExit, in killing whites and taking over the state in terms of turning it into a foreign country?
Well, I think that what they're going to do is, first of all, the way that they view it in the Chinese now, in my understanding, is it's been Dianne Feinstein's husband, Richard Blum, which has been able to sell a great deal of property, farmland, as a result of the man-made drought here in California, to the Chinese. He is, of course, affiliated and backed by the Bank of China. This is Dianne Feinstein's husband, Richard Blum, one of the largest commercial brokers in the world, I understand. But it's been selling up California, buying up and then selling California farmland because the farmers can't farm because they don't have water. Shutting off the water to these farmers and allowing the water to be drained out to the ocean has been proven time and time again to be a great deal profit, a big profit maker for real estate brokers who want to buy low and sell high. And that's what they've been doing to the Chinese, and it's all been going through Richard Blum. So they've got a big investment here in California farmland, which is the breadbasket for the world. I mean, California is a huge agricultural business. It's the biggest business we have. But it's also the access to arable farmland is enormous here. It's rich farmland. Just add water to it. I mean, and so the ability to feed millions upon millions, billions of people here in California is definitely here. And that's what's happening in China, is that they need the farmland. And they have a particular type of farming pattern that they have, or practices that they have, that really basically squeeze all the minerals and everything out of the soil. And that's going to be interesting to see if they actually do come here and start using some of their farming techniques, because they'll destroy the countryside. That's what's happened in China already. And we have, of course, a very, very scientific, well thought out farming system here in California that's getting maximum yields, and we still have huge potential if we follow our farming regimes that we have here. But there's a particular problem with farmers in California in that there is a huge need. When I was doing my charter school and we were doing our FFA programs, we brought in farmers from here in Northern California, about 20 of them, for a conference, a mini conference, to discuss about what their needs were from our school, because we were going to be producing farmers and skilled workers. And we wanted to hear from them. Well, we sat around the table, and everybody who was there, the farmers that were there, were 70 years and older, except for one. And that one had inherited his farm. He's in his mid-30s. But they said, look, we have a problem because we're the last of the farmers. When we die, we don't have kids to give our farms to. Our kids have gone off and done other things. That's just been part of the pressure to get kids off of the farm. So here you have a situation where you have the people growing out of the farms. Those farms are going to ultimately fall in the hands of real estate brokers. They're going to be selling them to China. Or if the things start to pan out here, they'll just take it. So the Chinese are going to play an integral role. They want to protect their investment that they have here in California through their farmlands, and then they want to exploit it. They want what we have. They want the resources. See, China doesn't really care about the rest of the world. They just are concerned about Chinese. Even though America is the, you know, if America says boo to them and stops buying products from them, their economy is going to go crazy. But as far as food's concerned, they're going to be here to take it. And it just so happens, just now, just this year, we're starting to get all the rain. It's like they've just turned the rain back on here in California. And so when this is the first wet season I can remember in 6 or 7 years that we're having, this kind of has an semblance of normalcy. So when people start talking about geoengineering and, you know, is there geoengineering or not, there absolutely is geoengineering and weather warfare. It's happening here in California. It has been for the last probably 8 years. And again, we're draining our reservoirs. Hello. Why? Because they don't want any water reserves. They want to say that we're in a drought. But it's interesting that this year, with all the things that are happening, it's like their program is coming together now, and they're starting to irrigate basically California in preparation for next year's growing season. I can see it. You can just see this happening. Okay. So there's a lot of things happening, a lot of moving parts, and geoengineering is playing a part in it. We see the geoengineering here in California. All we do is look up in the skies, and we can see them laying the stuff down.
I hope you're sitting down, Paul, because we have had this happen in our conversations more than once. I've written a lot about Dianne Feinstein and how she and her husband have enriched themselves illegally when she's occupied key committee positions and she's directed government work her husband's way.
Right.
She went into the Senate as a millionaire, and now she may be a billionaire. Now, to the point of what you're saying here, I had written stories prior to about the Chinese ghost cities that are these major metropolitan areas that are built without anybody in them.
Right.
And Goldman Sachs has a hand in it, and so does Dianne Feinstein's husband. And what they started to do in China, and I don't know if you're aware of this, they'll back the military trucks up, and you got 10 minutes to grab your stuff, get on the truck, get the hell out, and they've got the bayonets on them.
Right.
And they're actually forcing hundreds of thousands of Chinese from their rural areas where they're concerned about revolution into these Chinese ghost cities that Bloom has a part in. And he's all the way through this now. And by the way, George Soros is part of this too. This is no coincidence. Now we come back to California. I ran a story, oh gosh, Paul, I don't remember, 2 years ago. I've got to go back and research it. But about 2 years ago, I ran a story that talked about how the drought was being artificially manufactured. I went through a lot of the climatological data. I had pretty good evidence. And I said, and this is also what I'm getting, the UN is going to occupy California as they force people out because of the drought.
Right.
And I linked it into your part of the state, and I said, this is the EPA's part where they're shutting off water rights to ranchers and farmers who've had 150-year compacts, and that's when I delved into the state of Jefferson.
Right.
It's a small world, isn't it?
Right. That's what the state of Jefferson's all about, is protecting those water rights. I mean, that's a big part of it, because they're just stealing the water. and you know, here in California. But the other part of it, and I want to get to this weather warfare business, because that's exactly what they've been waging on California, is weather warfare.
Yes.
In my opinion. Now, you know, I was not a believer in geoengineering. I got to tell you, this is a 4-year experience for me. If you would have asked me 4.5 years ago, or even when I started Agenda 21 Radio, I would have said, nah, come on. And I did say, aw, come on. And the first time I was approached with it, I said, aw, come on. And so then I started, I'm a science guy. You know, I taught sciences for years. That's my background. And so then I said to myself, well, let's think about this for a minute, Paul. And so I started doing research, and I found patents for the chemicals that they're spraying. Now, this is where it really hit home. The patents belongs, I believe, to a James Chang. And he was working for Hughes Aircraft in Southern California when he came up with a whole series of chemicals that they're spraying on us, including the ammonia, aluminum oxides, the nanoparticulates, that are supposed to reflect the light, but then in fact they're not doing that. They're acting as desiccants, and they wick up the moisture in the air and put it in the clouds, and then the moisture can be transferred to other parts of the globe, which is the successful thing that they do here in Northern California. We can bear witness to it every day because the jet stream collides with us. We can actually see, you know, where the jet stream is located up here in Northern California where we're at. We have a beautiful view of how this whole thing plays out. And, but the nanoparticulate matters by James Chang were patented in 1990-91. Now it's kind of interesting. So I was doing this research on James Chang because I was interested because he lived in Tustin, California. You can look this up, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not making it up. Now here's the deal. James Chang lived 2 blocks from my in-laws. I drove by his house almost every day for several years. And did it up until 2000. His residence. And I thought to myself, you got to be kidding me. Grove Site Drive. I mean, so that was a relationship. I drove by his house every day. Huh. But the point is, these patents are out there, ladies and gentlemen. And by the way, the time in which he patented this and the time in which spraying began, there is a direct correlation to the increase in explosion of autism. I mean, in 1990, and I don't know when you were in education, but I can remember very few autistic children were in schools. You never saw that. You didn't have a lot of autistic children. Now everybody's got autism. Well, why? Well, it's because we've been spraying them with nanoparticular particles, in my opinion. And the vaccines have come into that, and, you know, that's another part of it. But there's a direct correlation. You can just see the graph correlates perfectly to the times of a maximum spraying that they've been doing. This is a global effort, by the way. And see, people can't come to that term or that position to understand the global effort by geoengineering. And it is. Now, one of the things that really tipped me about the evidence for this, because I was still, when I got a lot of information, I was still very doubtful, and I said, well, you haven't talked to anybody who's actually a witness to this. And, well, I live in a community where there's an Air Force base, Beale Air Force Base, highly top secret. It's where the drones are all flying from, and U-2s and everything. Rich history. And I was able to make contact, not from Beale, but from other places that, you know, people talk. And I was able to make contact with 3 pilots. And they've flown those missions of spraying the chemicals. And I got pretty good interviews with them. And these are high-ranking people. They're no longer in the Air Force. But they were flying the missions. Dave, I mean, so to me, you know, as a science guy, gee whiz, you've got your witnesses. These are very, very credible people. And, you know, you can see it in the skies here in California. And there's cause and effect. In fact, I'll tell you right now, if you go back and if somebody wants to do this, please do. Go back and check out your weather patterns that were happening over California a week in advance of the fires in Tennessee. And you'll see there was no spraying going on, which is interesting for Northern California. Because normally what happens when there's a lot of spraying going on, there's usually flooding in central part of the country or on the East Coast or in Tennessee, Texas in particular. When we get highly dosed with chemicals, there's going to be a flood that's going to happen somewhere, or there's going to be some sort of weather modification taking place within 2 to 3 days after the events. We see this all the time. And prior to the Tennessee fires, there were none of the chemtrails that we normally see up in the skies for days And everybody, people on our Tea Party and everybody, see that we're not stupid around here. Like I said, there's a lot of Air Force personnel running around that are retired or used to work at the base. They get it. They get it. They see this.
Well, I get it too, because I've heard this before, but in a different context. And I'm going to throw a name at you. You've probably heard of Nick Begich.
Yeah.
And Nick has been on the quiet side lately, but he did the seminal work on Project HARP.
Right.
And Project HARP was about electrifying the ionosphere, and you move the ionosphere, therefore you alter the weather. And I know for a fact, and I've seen the patents, Nick has put all this together in a book he wrote in the 90s called Angels Don't Play This HARP. And he had the patents from Bernard Eastman and all others that basically said this is what they can do. And they tell you right there. And by the way, I've written extensively on Air Force owning the weather 2025. And I know people that were connected to this. And I've interviewed them privately for confidential sources. And we have this technology that you're speaking about. But what we're looking at here, what you're talking about, is when they do these chemtrails, they're also linking into the ionosphere.
Right.
It's all part of the same thing. And you're right. They do something in California to get an effect in Kansas.
That's correct. But then, and we can predict the weather here. I mean, I have a relative who lives in Texas and who thought I was absolutely out of my mind. But he moved to Texas recently, or over a year and a half ago. And it was interesting because I was telling him, well, watch out for the floods. Well, of course, when he moved in, they started flooding. When he opened up his business, he was flooded out of his new brand new business. The day he opened up his business, he was going to close everything up. They got all the remodel done of the building. And the Monday they were going to come in to do business, they were flooded out because of this. And so now I've got a believer, of course. But we can predict the weather here with the ramifications. We can't exactly know where it's going to be because you've got these HARP devices that are kind of moving things around and, you know, that sort of thing. But the high-frequency active auroral research project is what you're talking about with HARP. And these are real. You can look them up. We're not making this stuff up. And they've been doing all kinds of stuff all around the globe with HARP, including causing earthquakes. Because, you know, the low frequency that they use can actually, and they do use HARP to look for oil in oil shales. And they can create many earthquakes. They know this.
Yeah, I'm well aware of the earthquake potential. And on the document from Air Force owning the weather 2025, they list how they do it. They have the patents,
right.
And you can look at the descriptions in the footnotes.
Yeah, so those people that think that you and I are making this stuff up, we're not. And they're using it right now against us. Right now as we speak. And this whole thing with the drowning out California is a classic example of that. We've seen this, we've been talking about it, and you know, now all of a sudden it's come to fruition.
Well, I want to go back to what I had said earlier and connect a couple dots here, Paul. You've got Feinstein's husband involved in relocating farmers off farmland that has been over-tilled, over-farmed, and they're forcibly making them work as laborers in factories created in the ghost cities.
Right.
But on the other hand, you've got the same group, along with the Chinese and the Chinese military, that are going to take control of California farmland. Are they setting up their own breadbasket here to take it back there?
Yes, exactly right.
I want to connect one more dot. For the life of me, I'd have to go back and research. I can't recall it. There's an online university that issued an analysis of the California drought, and I took them to task because they weren't set up to do this kind of research. They had no business venturing down this path. And they were saying, basically, California is going to need outside help. And I'm not kidding. This is exactly what they concluded. And I concluded from that, from other things that I found with UN documentation, that the UN was planning to take over California. And I said the drought will force a migration.
Right.
And then people will vacate, and then the UN will take over. So let's go back to CalExit. Is the UN a player in Calexit, and could the UN actually be in charge, at least for a while?
That's the plan with Calexit, is that they will turn over sovereignty to the United Nations as a nation.
Is that is that an intermediary step, or is that a permanent step?
That's a permanent step. No, that's what they plan. That's their plan. They're going to turn themselves over to the sovereignty of the United Nations. That's in their plan. That's what they talk about.
I don't like to do the I told you so thing, and I'm not saying that to you because I never told you this. But you know what? I said this in an article 2 years ago.
Well, yeah, and you know, the other part of it, too, is the United Nations. I think, I don't know if it's been because of your article, but the United Nations actually has a plan for refugees from California because of the drought. They put a plan together for that.
Yes. In fact, the guy that's in charge of it is named Peter Sutherland. He's the head of the migration group,
right?
From the UN, and there's a title for it. It's, once again, I got to go back and look at my notes from 24 months ago. But Peter Sutherland, listen to his credentials, Paul. He is the former president of the Bank of Ireland, and that's about as innocuous as it gets. He is the, or was the head of the Western European Division of the Trilateral Commission. He's a Bilderberg attender. This guy is a globalist.
Yep.
And, he'll be in charge of the relocation.
Well, you know, they tried to be in charge of the state legislature here back in 2012 with Nicholas Bergerow, the homeless billionaire out of Bonn, Germany, mm-hmm. who's got all these UN connections as well. He's a totalitarian monster, in my opinion. But he's a multi-billionaire globalist, and he came in here with Prop 31. This is back in 2012. And because his concern was because, and he's, you know, he's not a Californian, but he sponsored it, put up the money for it, wrote it, and said because of the concern that Californians have about how their government is being conducted and their budget is so out of whack that they're going to plan all these things for California. And it was a proposition. It was designed to put California on a 2-year budget cycle. And everything that was basically coming out of them was from the United Nations. And what happened, interestingly enough, is that the Republican Party here in California, which is no longer in existence. By the way, Calexit has its own political party now. They've developed, I think it's called the California Republic Party, something like that. But in other words, they're going to replace the Republicans because the Republicans are absolutely insignificant in California. But I got news, Democrats. That party is designed to replace you, too. Because that's the new Communist Party that's going to dominate and get rid of all the Republicans and Democrats for once and for all. And I can't remember the name of the guy's name right now. I'll think of it. But it was a plant inside the Republican Party that brought the Republican Party down to its knees finally. But Nicholas Bergeron, jumping in on all that stuff, proposed a whole new legislative package for California in the form of a proposition. So we got a hold of that. When I read it, and I said to myself, I'm like the only person who read it, I guess. I read it, and I said, this is nothing more than a UN takeover of California through the legislative process. We're just going to vote it in. And so I got with my Republican buddies, Chris Street and other people, and we got the Republican women. The Republican women, who, by the way, activated throughout the state. And what they did is they actually got all the paper, they flooded the Republican women with yes on 31. This is after they were the endorsement by the Republican Party. So you know what the Republican women did? They took all the documentation and they got post-its and stickies, and where it said yes on, they put a sticker over it. Thousands of these things the women did. They put no on 31 and passed all those out. It was defeated 60% to 40% in California. It was defeated. That was by Nicholas Bergeron, and that was one of the attempts to take over California's legislative process. A non-Californian. So I kept asking the question, who is this clown to come in here and tell us in California how to govern ourselves, you know? But this is the working inner workings of how they want to try and take over your states, ladies and gentlemen, and your state's sovereignty and destroy it. And right now that's what they attempt is to destroy California's sovereignty. It's actually a destruction of the national sovereignty. And this has not happened since the Civil War. So everything in this discussion that I've been talking about is secession. It's illegal. there's multiple felonies being committed by state leaders here in California. It's amazing. And they mean business by warfare. When they're openly talking about killing Americans, and again, I ask another witness today, Dave, if that was, every time I get one of these witnesses, I ask them these questions. I ask them, are they intending to kill people? Yes. Are they intending to kill white people specifically? Yes. Are they intending to kill black people? And they said, absolutely yes.
Why the blacks?
It's pretty common knowledge in most circles in the Hispanic community. At least the radical Hispanics don't care much for blacks, period, end of subject. And now we're talking about La Raza, the race. They don't care for blacks. And that has been, I have asked that question every single time. I had a friend of mine who is a black activist. I talked to him this afternoon on the phone. And he knows all about this. And he was, he'll tell you right up front, they intend to kill blacks. We know that. It's only Mexicans, only pure Mexicans that need to apply to California from now on. That's the way they look at it. Well, of course, they have a little problem because they're going to have a lot of Chinese here. This is how, this is the way they've been thinking. Their thinking is all distorted, Dave. They don't have a plan. I mean, they really, at this point, the reports that I'm getting from inside the Capitol is there's a lot of chaos with these guys because it's like they've never done this before. No, you haven't, because it doesn't happen in the history of this country very often. So how do you overthrow the country? And then the question will come up, just like what happened with Lenin. Once you had the revolution and you did the overthrow, well, what's next? You got to govern now. you got to be the ruler. But it's going to be a dictatorship. And a lot of this is driven by the Catholic Church and the Jesuits. A lot of it. They're on board with it.
I'm going to see if we can't connect a really big dot. As I told you prior to our broadcast, I have very clear information that the forces for civil war are lining up in this country, and I won't go into great detail in this broadcast. That's another story for another time. We're looking at total chaos. Trump has surrounded himself with hardline military in an attempt to pull more military support to him. We are seeing massive troop and equipment movements around the country. I'm getting these reports hourly now. I mean, and I've been talking to other talk show hosts who are getting the same thing. Here's the connecting the dot question. There's going to be violence whether Trump gets the 270 on December 19th or he doesn't get the 270. There's going to be violence. There's going to be massive violence. Michael Moore is calling for massive violence at the inauguration, as are other people calling for that as well. Is this coordinated, this California Calexit, and the violence? Do you think it's being coordinated with what the DNC is trying to do with this coup against Trump?
Yeah, I think what this is, the coup against Trump is a distraction of what's going on out here in California. They're keeping everybody low-key on what's going on out here in California until they get things in place. And as it was explained to me, because I've been asking about, where's Jerry Brown on all this? And, Jerry Brown is a staunch Jesuit. He was raised in a Jesuit family, went to Jesuit high school, went to Jesuit university. He's pictured in his priest outfit as a Jesuit in many pictures in circa 1959-60 era. And, he was a governor of California from, 76 to 84, 76 to, when was it? Yeah, it must have been 76 to 80. No, 82. No, it must have been 84. No, 82, 86, or 84, yeah. So anyway, now that was two terms. Now he's got another two terms. There's very big questions and marks because in California's Constitution, it says you can only be a governor for two terms, period, end of subject. But he got some sort of special legislation passed and approved, we think illegally, hammered through where he could become governor again. So he became governor for two more terms now. Well, having a Jesuit governor has been devastating in California because the first time he shut down when he was here in the 70s, he shut down the building of like the Auburn Dam and other dams that could be helping us with drought and so on right now. And now he's just been an extension of that whole thing going forward. But his leadership has led us to this point. We're at revolution now. So this plan to take over California, as it's been explained to me many, many times, and I totally buy into this, and I totally, my own research tells me this, has been going on for a number of years, at least from the 60s, perhaps even earlier than that, to turn California over as a state, as an independent body, to a governance system that is not going to be a democratic system, a Republican system. It's going to be a democratic system. In fact, I was told by two sources today that they want to turn California into a democracy and not a republic. Two different sources, they have no idea who each other are, that their intent is to turn it into a democratic society, not a republic. Now, for those of you that don't know the difference, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk for a minute. Because, you know, yeah, we can be democratic, but, you know, without being a republic and form of government, it means we have chaos. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you see somebody who's, somebody's being accused of being a horse thief. So everybody says, okay, I only think he's a horse thief. Everybody raises their hand and they go and hang him. Well, wait a minute. A Republican form of government means that we're going to have like a trial. The person's got rights. You know, and what happens if you find out when you go through the trial and you go through the process and present the evidence, it's not the guy. See what I'm saying? There's a big difference between just being a pure democracy and a Republican form of government.
Well, yeah,
they're asking for that.
I've heard it expressed like this, Paul. A democracy consists of two wolves and a sheep deciding who's for dinner.
Right.
And that's how I see it. Well, I want to connect another dot, and this is a really big dot. I think we are going to see the UN take over California. I have 2 years of background to make that statement. But I also want to link this into the Gulf region. And I got to try to convey this in the most concise way possible. I documented, and people are going to have to take my word for this, and I'll put links on the broadcast for this. I documented 9 times Sunday about the fact that the Gulf oil explosion of 2010 was not an accident. I wrote a 7-part series called The Great Gulf Coast Holocaust, and I had the stock movements between Transocean and also BP and other subsidiaries that were involved in the explosion. And I interviewed experts, and they talked about all the anomalies with the investigation. Long story short, here comes Jesse Ventura, and this is, you know, as I was writing the series, I think I was on part 4 when I watched Jesse's series on his show Conspiracy Theory on True TV, in which he interviewed someone named S.I. Reese of the Army Corps of Engineers, and she said, oh yes, we have a $40 billion grant to evacuate the Gulf. And then I started doing research on it, and lo and behold, I found out who would be in charge of this. Now, wait till I connect these three dots, Paul, and you're going to have a holy you-know-what moment. The guy who had been in charge, it had been a UN project. They never carried it out at that date. I still think it's on the books. His name is, again, Peter Sutherland. But it gets better. Peter Sutherland, up until about 11 months prior to the Gulf oil explosion, was the CEO of BP. But it gets better. Goldman Sachs was the great coordinator between all these parties and the Great Gulf Holocaust. You could say that they were the brainchild that conspired to do what happened. And Peter Sutherland was given a position at Goldman Sachs, coming from BP, to be the head of Goldman Sachs in what they called an executive CEO position. It was a position that was specifically created for him so he could coordinate everything. And then one more little connector here, where they've used the drought to be an excuse to bring in extreme measures of control in California, and will continue to do so. They did the same thing in the Gulf by the use of the chemical Corexit. Corexit's banned in 17 countries, highly toxic. It doesn't disperse the oil. It only makes it worse. It's an easy agent to get into the transpiration cycle. The people in the Gulf, and I'm quoting now from Ohio, Oregon State University researcher Kim Anderson, Wilma Subra from Tulane University, who said, we're going to see lifespans cut 20, 25 years among a large portions of our population because of this Corexit. And she said the benzene levels, or Super said the benzene levels were 65 times normal. Here's my point. Let me step back and then pull it all together. We're seeing Peter Sutherland's name being connected to the evacuation, in part, of undesirables from California. Should we call them deplorables?
Yeah.
And we're seeing the plans on the books with Army Corps of Engineer funding to $40 billion to evacuate the Gulf. They're there, and the same people are involved.
And, of course, with the evacuation centers being FEMA camps.
Exactly. And I'll go one more. It's a little different in terms of what they're after. I think you've made an excellent case about the farmland in California. That is a goal. In the Gulf, when you use Corexit, it doesn't disperse the oil. It pushes the water or the oil down into the water column, and nothing can survive except for algae. And algae, this is no accident. Algae is the new biofuel, and algae is proliferating in the Gulf, and they're setting this up to be an algae farm production, and they want this to be a big energy hub. That's their motivation in the Gulf, to get the people out of there. And I think that they really thought about doing it in 2010 and 11. And they backed off, but I don't think they're done. By the way, this may interest you to know, Paul, there's still an oil leak going on in the Gulf, and they're still spraying Corexit at night.
Wow.
So I'm sorry to be so long-winded on this, because I don't want to be interviewing myself, but you hit the mother lode with this thing, and what I'm saying is this is a pattern.
Right. No, absolutely. Yeah, and this is why we connect. You know, I tell people on my radio show, I'm going to drag you kicking and screaming from one dot to the next. And you know, that we might not like what you're saying and hearing, but, you know, when you start to look at it and you connect the dots, you can't deny it. It's kind of like what happened to me when I was talking about earlier about my come to Jesus on what was going on with geoengineering. As a science person, at some point I couldn't deny the facts right in front of me. And that's when it came to James Chang. And they are patents. They are legal patents. I mean, you know, why would Hughes Aircraft, of all things, you know, Howard Hughes Aircraft,
right.
And Howard Hughes was dead by then, I think he was. When did he die? Was it the 80s? Something like that?
I think you're in the neighborhood, because remember the will surfaced in the 90s and all that?
But Hughes Aircraft, which is, you know, the Skunk Works, all this other stuff that we're into with that, he was responsible for, you know, the patents while working for Hughes Aircraft for geoengineering chemicals. And they're all listed. I mean, there are dozens of them. And there's films out there. There's videos talking about weather warfare and how they're doing it and using it. And of course, there are people from the Air Force that have come out and talked. And there was one, was in a meeting in Redding, California, and there was one that was up there talking about, as an Air Force active person, or had been an active person, loading these aircraft. I mean, when these people are coming out like this, after a while, people have to realize geoengineering is like for real. And, you know, you can't deny it. And that's why I say you have to connect dots. You have to drag people kicking and screaming from one dot to another. That's what I guess our job is.
No, what is our job to do this? But it is interesting when you step back and you start to see these massive patterns.
Right.
Let me tell you what I've been told motivated. See, this is all connected too. The fact that the Chinese military backed their trucks up into these rural villages in the outlying provinces in China and made so many of these farmers, and they're still doing it, vacate the premises and go to work, you know, kind of like their own
cities.
Exactly. Their own industrial revolution is what they're forcing, not by natural means like we had, but forcing it to happen. And this is what I was told, that the greatest threat to the Chinese government is a revolution from the outer provinces.
Right.
Because these people are so hard to control, and they're really beyond a lot of the means of government control, and so they wanted to bring them into the sphere. So now you got to do something to replace the farming. Hello, California.
Right. Wake up, California. Exactly. That's exactly what the, you know, California would be the breadbasket to China. I mean, it's going to serve, you know, 6 billion people or how many they have, but, you know, what, 3 billion people, what, you know, after a million, who's counting? But, you know, it would take a big chunk. And, of course, the farming, is the land mass where you'd be doing all this farming is very condensed. You know, there's a lot of it. It's massive, and it's not all farmed yet. It could be farmed out. But, yeah, that would be one intent that they want to do. Now, the other part of this is the Chinese economy, because it plays right into these people that are on the outliers, that, you know, in the rural communities that they're, you know, bringing into the cities to work in the factories and build, you know, make Apple computers, by the way. But, you know, a lot of these places, they treat their employees terribly. And, you know, they're like, back in the day, we used to have the, company towns and so on. And, you know, they have company cities over there. They have company buildings. And as an example, in some of the Apple facilities over there, I know this for a fact because I've talked to people that go over there and work with these people. They have large high rises that they, you know, stack and pack type homes that they talk about that they house their employees in. The employees go to work every day, then they go right to the high rise. They go sleep for a few hours, go back to work. I mean, it's really, really regimented, and it's brutal work as far as I'm concerned when you can't have any access outside. So they've had a high suicide rate. So what they've done to prevent the suicide from these buildings, because people were jumping out of the buildings, is they've extended huge nets around the buildings to catch the people who want to jump out.
Oh, my God.
You can't make this stuff up. I mean, so they're trying to keep their employees safe by keeping them from jumping out with a net. I mean, it's amazing, but they have a bigger problem economically because people aren't buying the goods anymore. We're in a recession, at least in China, where people are not buying as much. So that's created a lot of problems. The Chinese, in order to keep people happy, keep them working or keeping them in money, been having to pay their employees for not working. Now, that's a little bit different dynamic because that's what they're afraid of, Dave, is that this mass of people that's not being employed or not working is going to turn against them, and they've been taken off the farms. What do they have to do? Well, the cities will erupt. And that's the thing that they're afraid of the most, is that all of a sudden Donald Trump's going to come in and say, niet to Chinese goods. Look what happens to China then. Then you have a revolution. And they're on that brink right now. And Trump knows it, of course.
And Jerry Brown is at the center of this plot.
Absolutely.
In other words, if he were listening to this right now, he'd probably be, excuse my French, but dropping a load in his drawers that we have figured this out.
Right. It's not, listen, Jerry, if you're listening, we're not the only ones who figured it out.
Yes.
You've got dozens of people. I mean, in fact, I was on one phone call yesterday. It was Monday. And days fly. And I was talking to somebody, a perfect stranger to me, who had been referred, and they referred, you know, one of these things, how we vet each other and stuff. And they brought this whole thing up. I said, how do you know this? Well, we just started connecting dots. So it was a great conversation. But I just want to tell you, Jerry, we're not the only ones who have figured it out. You can thank the History Channel. I think this thing that hunting Hitler has really helped a lot with understanding what's going on with Hitler and the whole Fourth Reich thing, because that's now being outed as a real thing, a real event. And who's masterminding all this behavior around the globe? It's happening, and we know who's doing it. And the History Channel is right involved with this. So if the History Channel knows all this stuff, Jerry, and we're just figuring it out on our end with the help of the History Channel, a lot of other people do too, and I'm sure the Trump camp has this completely figured out. Just a speculation on my part, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, you can't, it's not, don't blame us. We're just a messenger, but the people have already figured it out.
If Trump, by some miracle, manages to survive our inauguration day and become our president, will he be sending the troops into California?
Well, it's kind of interesting because, this is something that's really kind of actively playing out right now as we speak, because there's a big movement in Jefferson, of course, as you know, to form the 51st state. That's a legal, lawful process to do that. It's constitutionally correct to do it. It's legal to do it. We've been following all attorneys. We have attorneys that have been helping us with this, and we've been following every legal recourse to form a new state, put another star on the flag, a 51st state, to create a more perfect union. And in fact, what the way this is starting to look like with this CalExit program and so on, that the successful formation of a new state, a 51st state of Jefferson, will in fact actually save the rest of California as a state.
Why is
that's
that?
Because I think that's going to rattle enough people in California. That people in California are just like everybody else in the United States. They don't get it at first, but when they start to learn what the process and procedure is, and they start to learn that CalExit is not a fun and little game thing, like many people might think initially, and say, oh yeah, CalExit, you know, the liberal mind just jumping all over it. But once, you know, people in California start to figure out this is meaning leaving the whole nation and becoming your own nation. And this is what they're preaching on these websites. You know, California is the sixth largest economy. We need to be our own nation. You know, I mean, that's called sedition, by the way. There's a name for that, and that's illegal. And they are being seditious. So that's why I say these people are really illegally going to get themselves in trouble, especially the politicians that are engaging in this. And they are engaging it. They're talking about it at the state capitol. So people are going to start to discern the difference. And California will have to give up Jefferson. I don't see any other recourse for them but to do that, and they're going to have to follow the process. There's a number of different things that are happening. I'm not going to reveal them on the radio right now. But by their own hand, they're going to deliver Jefferson as a new state. But in that process, the rest of California will wake up and realize they're going to be California and stay California and not an independent nation, because that'll never happen. Not as long as this union's together, it's not going to happen. This nation's together. The last time this was happening was the Civil War. And I don't think people want to spill, you know, another, you know, probably rather the numbers of 700,000 would probably be, you know, several million people being killed. By agents of the outside, I might add. That's the thing. All these people that are going to be here to kill Americans and so on, in this so-called, whether it's a national revolution or revolution here in California, are people that are really illegal immigrants or people that are brought in from the outside. They're not Americans, and they're not Californians.
This is, wow. That's all I can say is, wow, this is overwhelming. You know, Paul, this has been so eye-opening for me, because this takes me back to what I was doing 2 years ago. And actually, it goes back to, as I said, to the Gulf oil crisis from almost 6.5 years ago.
Right.
And I'm looking at all these dots getting connected. They have been planning the breakup of the United States for various reasons for a very long time.
Right. That's why I started the radio show, Jet and 21 Radio, when I recognized it. I got it. I instantly got it. And again, it's my own history personally, but... When Rosa Corey was on my show, and Heather Goss, those two wonderful young ladies, they're not so young, but they're wonderful ladies. They're young. I better watch what I say. But I had about 10 minutes with each one of them, and I said to myself, bingo, now I get what's going on. And that's what it is. It's about the dissolving of the United States. They have to destroy the United States in order to get this one world. And this is going to be the ugly process, but they're frustrated because after 8 years of Obama, they have not been able to dissolve the United States. And they thought they were going to. And we've been pushing back. The mainstream media, they thought they had in the bag. They learned in this last election cycle they didn't. And in fact, what we Americans did in response to what we were seeing is we followed our constitutional rights. So, the first thing we did as Americans is we all became members of the press. First Amendment, freedom of
exactly,
press.
Exactly, yeah.
And then the second part of that was freedom of speech.
Well, that's threatened, yeah.
Well, totally, they're attacking press and speech.
Yeah, I'm a Russian spy, according to the Washington Post and the U.S. government now.
There you go.
Because I opposed Hillary Clinton. Paul, we are out of time. I mean, this could go on forever and ever, and we're going to do more follow-up on this as circumstances warrant. Paul, tell everyone in about 10 seconds how they can follow your good work.
Yeah, you go to a21r.com. That's a21r.com. That's the abbreviation for Agenda 21 Radio. And you can email me at paul@a21r.com also. So, yeah, we do 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. And we're going to be doing a live broadcast from YouTube and on Facebook here pretty soon. We got our computers in finally. We're going to be doing that every day, so you'll be able to follow us that way.
Awesome.
And, things are happening. So stay strong, America. We are exceptional Americans, like I always say.
On that note, this is Dave Hodges with Paul Preston. We are signing off. Thanks for joining us. Really interesting interview with Paul Preston. And I can't emphasize how real this is. Washington and Oregon, part of Cascadia, according to the Canadian government, who've made an offer. And where did I get that crazy information? The Seattle Times. The Gulf leaving. Yeah, that's right. Peter Sutherland. How many times have you heard me over the last several years talk about the Bilderberg man? You know, and I went through his background there on the interview with Paul. This is the breakup of the United States. You got Otslan, you got California, Calexit, you got Cascadia, and you've got the Gulf Coast. Yeah, what's left? What are they going to do with the rest of these people? You know, maybe there's something to what we've read. America2050.org. Do you remember that document? And I've referenced it here on the show. And it's written by Bob Kudla and Gugla. And who is he? He's a longtime friend of Obama. He was his mentor in his community service days. And he basically says we're going to go into 11 mega regions of 6 million people each. 6 million? That's 66 million. And that's led me to ask the question, where the heck are the other 250 million Americans? Well, perhaps it's not all depopulation. Perhaps we're looking at the 40 million in the Gulf. You got another 40 million in California. I'm not sure about the combined populations of Washington and Oregon, but you got to figure somewhere around 12, 15 million people. You know, we're pushing here 100 million people right there that may not be part of the United States. So maybe that projection is not that far off. Of course, you get into some of these other projections that are done by some of these military think groups, and they call for the same reduction in population by 2025. One population that's a mouthpiece of the CIA said that we were supposed to be, what was it, at 65 million people, and our GNP would be about one-fifth of what it is now. Yeah, I've written about that quite a bit on thecommonsenseshow.com. Really dire times we face. This is why people say, Dave, why are you so in love with Trump? I'm not. But where else are you going to hitch your wagon politically? Where are you going to hide? There's really nowhere to go. You know, the fence sitters are going to get splinters in their butts, and they're going to have to make a choice. You know, as George Bush said, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Well, you're either with the people who support the Republic, the nationalists, or you're with the globalists who are in favor of depopulation, the eradication of Christianity, and the evisceration of the United States Constitution and culture. Yeah, pretty simple, isn't it? Well, anyway, look, Merry Christmas to everybody. We love all of you. We appreciate you being with us. We will be back here in 2 weeks with a series of interviews. Next week, we'll have a replay on Christmas, and we hope you have a Merry Christmas as we celebrate the birth of Jesus. Go out and have a great 2 weeks, everybody. God bless.